It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast presented by the FTN Network. Week 10 pretty much in the books. Adam Pfeiffer here with the solo recap. And it was a really weird week. It seemed like it was one of the most low-scoring weeks of the season. And it definitely seemed like there were a lot more annoying touchdowns than usual from players we weren't starting in fantasy and, you know, vultures and things like that. But all in all, still a lot of really solid football out there and a lot to take away from the games. I still have one more game on Monday night between the Bears and Vikings. And then we're on to week 11 already, which is really crazy to see. But yeah, same as always, a little bit later on this Monday morning recording this podcast. So apologies for that, but still going to recap all the games. And let's get right to it. Let's start with Cleveland and Houston. This game was delayed about a half hour due to some weather concerns. The weather was bad all day for the most part. Really windy in Cleveland again. But the Browns win 10-7 behind two 100-yard games from their running backs. They get Nick Chubb back, who carries the ball 19 times for 126 yards and a touchdown. Could have been two touchdowns, but he wisely stepped out of bounds at the one-yard line to really seal the game. Frustrating some people, but what are you going to do? The guy still gave you 126 yards and a touchdown in his first game back. Kareem Hunt also carried the ball 19 times for 104 yards, and he also added three catches for 28 yards. So both Cleveland running backs really heavily involved. We know the Browns are going to run the ball at one of the highest rates in the NFL. They're top five in run rate this year, especially in games like this. So good to see Chubb back. I thought he looked really healthy. His vision was, per usual, fantastic. So yeah, you'll be starting Nick Chubb as a top 10 guy the rest of the way pretty easily. And Kareem Hunt's still going to be a top 15 back, especially in PPR leagues, even with Chubb back. The passing game, I mean, Hooper was a bust. One catch for 11 yards on two targets. I really liked him. I mean, hard not to, given the state of the tight end position. Baker only threw the ball 20 times, so, you know, Jarvis Landry continued to see a ton of targets. He had 5 of the 19 pass attempts. One of Baker's attempts was a throwaway. So, yeah, Jarvis and Hooper, I still think you feel pretty good about in terms of, you know, they're not going to be a heavy, high-volume passing offense, but these two are going to make up for a lot of those targets. For Houston, there's really nothing here except for Duke Johnson. We knew he would be the starter with David Johnson out with a concussion. He's now placed on IR. So he came in for David Johnson last week after he left in the first quarter, played a ton of snaps, and had every single running back carry. And then here in week 10, gets the start, has all 14 running back carries for the Texans, plays all but like three of the offensive snaps. No other running back got a carry. Was he incredible? No. You know, 54 yards on 14 carries, wasn't targeted in the passing game, which that will tend to happen in this Texans offense with Deshaun Watson. You know, he's often just going to tuck it in and run as opposed to checking it down. But, I mean, David Johnson's on IR, so he's out at least the next couple weeks. And you look at the Texans matchups, I mean, they have Detroit and New England up next, who are two very, very vulnerable run defenses. So the fact that Duke, you know, this isn't the Bill O'Brien Texans anymore, where they're just still going to use other backs and not use him. They clearly, you know, they activated CJ Procise, but he was nothing more than a return specialist and an occasional pass catching back, barely played in the game, and then they have nobody else to speak of. So Duke Johnson's going to be, you know, a mid-range running back too until David Johnson's back in the lineup. Other than that, though, there's really nothing much in this game. I mean, Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks both had 8 targets. They're seeing, you know, 7 to 12 targets every single game. Cooks has seen at least 8 targets in 5 consecutive games. So these guys are both really, really strong plays the rest of the season pretty easily. New York Giants 27, Philadelphia Eagles 17. This game is pretty ugly for the Eagles. Carson Wentz just continues to play really poorly. 21 of 37, 208 yards, no touchdowns. He was pressured a lot in this game. The Eagles ran the ball extremely well. Probably the best we've seen a team run against the Giants all year. I mean, Miles Sanders, 15 carries for 85 yards. Boston Scott had a 56-yard touchdown run. And then Corey Clement, I mean, Sanders should have had a huge game. He was running all over this team. He had 17 touches. He ran a ton of routes, played the majority of the snaps. But Corey Clement comes in and steals a 5-yard touchdown from him. And then Boston Scott had that 56-yard touchdown run. So, I mean, these things will happen. It was very frustrating. It was one of the reasons why Week 10 was so annoying, especially in the early games. But I think you're still pretty encouraged by what we saw from Miles Sanders, considering the Giants' run defense has been pretty solid all year long. Definite disappointment for Travis Fulgham, one catch for 8 yards on 5 targets. It is worth pointing out that Jalen Reagor, you know, still is healthier and fully healthy, looks like now, and Alshon Jeffrey returned. Alshon Jeffrey played in the slot a lot, which was really kind of surprising. He was in the slot 41% of the time on Sunday, which was a little bit surprising to me. Jalen Reagor actually led the team in routes run. He ran 38 pass routes, which is tied for 6th most among receivers so far in week number 10. So he was the guy. I mean, Fulgham was 11th in routes run with 34. So Fulgham was still running a ton of routes, but, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Travis Fulgham's a great story and he's going to be a part of this offense, but it was a lot easier for him to take advantage of it when they were without Jalen Reagor and Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey and Miles Sanders. And now these guys are all, outside of Zach Ertz, these guys are all healthy. So, you know, Fulgham was looking like a decent wide receiver too. Now he might be creeping more towards flex value, especially if Jalen Reagor. I mean, Reagor had 7 targets. Alshon had just 1. But Goddard had 6. Ward had 6. Richard Rodgers had 5, and Miles Sanders had 5. So, you know, don't expect the games you saw from Fulgham over the last couple weeks going forward. I wouldn't say drop him or anything like that, but I would not expect those huge games. For the Giants, Wayne Gallman, you know, continues to score touchdowns. He scored twice again on Sunday, 18 carries for 53 yards. Alfred Morris still at 8, but Wayne Gallman is giving you 15 to 17 touches per game. He's getting all the goal line work. Devonta Freeman, like, he returned to practice last week, but then he had to leave practice. He might have aggravated that ankle injury. So you look at Wayne Gallman, who has been scoring touchdowns all of a sudden. Like, it's not the most efficient or exciting production, but, you know, Gallman's been scoring, and running back is really, really, really weak a lot of the time in fantasy, so Wayne Gallman's probably a decent flex play going forward. For the receivers, nice game from Darius Slayton. He left in the first quarter, missed a drive, and came back, so that was good to see. 5 for 93. He had a long catch. I think it was 40 yards on the sideline against Darius Slay, so that was encouraging. I like Sterling Shepard a lot in this game. He had 6 for 47, so not exactly the game I was hoping for. Golden Tate was active. He had 2 for 44 and a bad game from Evan Ingram. I'm still starting Ingram each week just because of the upside he has at the position and how bad the position is. And, you know, Slayton, Shepard, those guys will be, you know, decent wide receiver 3 or flex plays each week going forward, I think. Detroit 30, Washington 27. This is a really interesting game for fantasy, especially when you look at both backfields. We got word around 11:30 on Sunday morning that DeAndre Swift was going to get the start. For Detroit, it was his first start of his career. And look, we are probably now seeing DeAndre Swift. Remember what Miles Sanders did in the second half of his rookie season last year, right? You know, it took a Jordan Howard injury, but he started to become the absolute workhorse and was, you know, a top 7 fantasy running back down the stretch. It definitely looks like we're about to see that from DeAndre Swift. So he got the start. He played 43 snaps. It was a season high, I believe. He had a career high 16 carries for 81 yards, and he added 5 catches for 68 yards and a touchdown. Adrian Peterson had 4 carries, and Kerryon Johnson had just 1 touch. Like I said, Swift played those 43 snaps, and Peterson and Johnson combined for 16 snaps. So it really does appear that the Lions have finally giving DeAndre Swift the keys of the offense. They lined him up out wide about 5 or 6 times, I believe, so that was encouraging. He's been a really productive pass catcher pretty much all season long, so that seems to continue to be there. They're still expected to be without Kenny Golladay, so there's definitely some targets to be had. Like Swift, we've seen his value increase kind of each of the last couple weeks. It went from, you know, he's a solid flex play to maybe a low-end RB2. And now after this usage, I mean, he's got to be looking at a low-end wide receiver one, right? I mean, six snaps lined up out wide. They didn't use him as a return man as much, given the fact that he started, which is encouraging, which means they want to give him the ball, you know, on offense and give him carries. Swift's got Carolina next. I believe he has a matchup with Houston in there as well. So DeAndre Swift is somebody that could really look to be finally winning you your league here down the stretch with these matchups, with how good he's been, and with the fact that finally the Detroit Lions are going away from Adrian Peterson and are giving DeAndre Swift 18 touches a game, which is really encouraging. Speaking of encouraging, how about the Lions passing game? I was not on the Lions passing game this week, and they were good. Stafford had 276 yards and three touchdowns. Marvin Jones, it's my own fault. I mean, there's no bigger Marvin Jones fan than me, and I wasn't on him this week. I thought it was a tough matchup against Kendall Fuller and a Washington team that's been really good against receivers. But give Marvin Jones credit. I mean, 8 for 96 and a touchdown on a team high 10 targets. You know, he's going to be a high end wide receiver 3 until Kenny Galladay's back. He continues to get a bunch of end zone targets, which we know is going to be the case for him. TJ Hockenson definitely disappointed here with 2 catches for 13 yards on 4 targets. Was a little bit banged up entering the game, but you're still starting Hockenson most weeks going forward. For Washington, Alex Smith, 390 passing yards on 55 passing attempts. That'll happen when your team gets down 24-3 relatively early. I mean, this J.D. McKissic thing was crazy. He had, 9 targets in the first half, finishes with 15. So he now has, 29 targets the last 2 weeks. Alex Smith, 40% of his pass attempts are behind the line of scrimmage, which is a massive, massive, massive clip. So with Smith in this offense, McKissic, the good thing about McKissic and, when it was 24-3, I thought Antonio Gibson was done, right? I thought it was going to be all McKissic, and McKissic definitely still got more snaps than Antonio Gibson, which will happen when this team is playing from behind, which probably will happen a lot. McKissic played 62 snaps. Antonio Gibson played 33. But the good news is Gibson's playing very few third downs and getting very little third down touches. But when he's on the field on first and second down, he's still going to get targets with Alex Smith at quarterback. Like I said, 40% of his pass attempts at or behind the line of scrimmage. Gibson had 4 targets in this game, caught all 4 of them. And of course, he's still the goal line back. He had 13 carries, 45 yards, and 2 touchdowns. They lined up McKissic and Gibson together a lot, which will help Gibson when he's not playing on third downs. So that's encouraging. Gibson, or McKissic, definitely still seems to be the first read more often than not. But the fact that they're lining them up on the field together is still pretty encouraging. And like I said, since that week one game against the Eagles where Peyton Barber had 10 opportunities from inside the 5, Antonio Gibson's been the clear goal line back. And McKissic had the short yardage touchdown this game. That was simply in hurry-up offense mode. It's not like they had a play set for J.D. McKissic to be the goal line back. It was they converted on a fourth down and long, ran up to the ball, called hike, and ran it in with McKissic real quickly. So Gibson, he'll obviously – the fact that he still got the work that he did and got the playing time that he did down 24-3 relatively early is really encouraging. Terry McLaurin continues to be awesome. 7 catches, 95 yards on 9 targets. He did fumble in this game, but he also had a 27-yard carry. He's awesome. Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Doesn't matter what the matchup is. He's just going to give you a massive floor each week. The touchdowns are the only thing that's a little bit concerning with McLaurin, but, I mean, this is a team that we don't project to score many touchdowns. He still had 9 targets, which led all receivers. I mean, this is a really concentrated passing offense. It's hard to So you look at some of the routes run in this game, right? Cam Sims, who's been getting a lot more playing time lately, like he ran 55 pass routes, second most in the NFL for week 10 behind only Terry McLaurin. That looks good, but then you remember that Washington threw the ball 55 times in this game. I think in deeper leagues, Cam Sims could be worth a look because he seems to have passed Steven Sims as maybe the wide receiver two on this team. But just keep in mind that this team did throw the ball 55 times in this game, so... But yeah, overall, I'm encouraged by both backfields, honestly. I think McKissick's a weekly PPR flex. Gibson's a solid RB2, you know, lower-end RB2, who gets a boost when Washington has leads. And again, that won't be very often. I thought this was going to be one of the few games where they could be at least, you know, competing. And they did eventually, which is good. But still, you have to be encouraged that Gibson had 17 touches in a game they were behind early and often. Green Bay 24, Jacksonville 20. Aaron Jones, massive, maybe the biggest disappointment of the week. One of the more popular plays on DraftKings at 7,100. Jones got the opportunity. He had 18 touches, but 46 yards on 13 carries. Had 5 catches for 49 yards to help salvage the day, but didn't score. Jamal Williams played a lot, I don't want to say a lot better, but he played really well in this game, and that, you know, we got to remember, like, Jamal Williams is still going to play and get, you know, 10 to 12 touches each week when he's healthy. That Thursday night game last week, he had the COVID tracking thing, so he couldn't play. And we saw Aaron Jones play a lot and touch the ball 25 times. In this game, you know, Jamal Williams was producing well. They still love him in the passing game and in pass protection. Jones still led the way with 41 snaps, but Jamal Williams played 31. And like I said, he had his usual, you know, 10 to 12 touches. I think he had 11 of them. Yeah, 11 touches. So Jones is still going to be a weekly RB1. But with Jamal Williams active, it's going to be harder for him to be in that closer to that top five range going forward. Now, he's going to have games where he scores 3 touchdowns because he's been, since entering the league, one of the best touchdown producers in the NFL. But these are the types of games you're going to get from him when he's not scoring. So just keep that in mind. Devontae Adams, really slow start. He had like 4 catches for 9 yards at one point. Lost a fumble. Had a couple of drops. Had a touchdown called back. Then he suffers an ankle injury. Went into the medical tent. Came back out and was on the sideline with his helmet on. Missed a couple plays in the open, in the next drive. And then came back in. And his touchdown was awesome. It was a play-action pass where Aaron Rodgers sold the handoff so well, and Devontae Adams literally was just, like, jogging, like he was just, you know, about to block, and at the last second, broke to the left. Adams didn't really get a ton of separation, but Rodgers threw it up, and he went over the defensive back and made a play. He had 12 targets. He has double-digit targets in every full game this season. He's going to get double-digit targets in every game this season. He's, you know, I know DeAndre Hopkins went off today, but, like, this is the wide receiver one in fantasy going forward. MVS, really a surprising game with the win there. He catches a 78-yard touchdown. He had 4 for 149. Alan Lazard could be back next week, but, you know, these are the types of games you'll get from MVS. You know, he is the deep threat in this offense. He is playing with an elite quarterback. He's going to pop off in some games, but when Lazard comes back, I think it's definitely going to hurt MVS. For Jacksonville, I mean, James Robinson, so good. He was ripping off 6, 7, 8 yard runs like it was nothing in this game. Had 2 touchdowns called back due to penalty. He had every single running back carry for Jacksonville, which isn't surprising considering he leads the NFL in opportunity share this season. Not being as involved in the passing game since Jake Luton's been under center. Just 2 catches in this game. Did have 5 targets. But, I mean, just what a story he's been. Like, how many running backs are you taking over James Robinson the rest of the way, right? Obviously you're taking Alvin Kamara. You're taking Dalvin Cook. Assuming McCaffrey's back next week, you're taking him. You're probably taking Aaron Jones. And then, like, Josh Jacobs had a really good game, but I don't know if I want Jacobs over him. Maybe Nick Chubb. There's not many running backs you're taking over James Robinson the rest of the way. They're not giving anybody else carries in this offense. He still has 100% of the team's goal or inside the 5 carries. He has, you know, just been a lock for 20 touches each week. Jacksonville's bad, but they've been good enough long enough in games to where he's not getting completely scripted out, which is important. So yeah, like James Robinson, look at the volume he's getting. He's had 20 touches or more in each of the last three games, 22, 25, and 23. Just an awesome story, an awesome player, and you're starting him every single week. DJ Chark, disappointing game considering no Jaire Alexander or Kevin King. Still leads the team with 56 receiving yards on four catches. He could have had a long touchdown this game. He had the defender beat. Luton, you know, give him credit. He threw everything he had into it, but it looked like the wind got a hold of it and it was underthrown and Chark couldn't make the adjustment. It could have been like a 50-yard touchdown, but tough matchup against Pittsburgh next week, but I'm still kind of encouraged by what we've seen from Luton and Chark. I don't think Luton's been anywhere near bad enough to where we have to freak out about DJ Chark. Tampa Bay 46, Carolina 23. Oh, man, I can't get DJ Moore right. To be like, I had the process right. If you remember on the DFS podcast, I talked about how these Tampa Bay corners are really aggressive, and DJ Moore being a deep threat can beat them on a double move. And he did on a, I think it was a 40-yard completion down the sideline. Then he had a long screen pass, which I said they needed to get him involved in the screen game more, and they did that, and he scored a touchdown. He had 4 for 96 yards and that touchdown on 7 targets. That's a team-high 7 targets. Really encouraging for DJ Moore. Like, he's such an ultra-efficient player that he'll still have really big games if he's not seeing 12, 13 targets like you want him to see. Teddy Bridgewater did lead this game with a knee injury. The report came out about 20 minutes ago that there's no structural damage and he has a chance to play. So really, really happy to see that. I was really worried it was going to be the same leg he hurt or the same knee he hurt a couple years ago, but it's not. And he has a real chance to play next week. So that's really, really good to see. Mike Davis was definitely a bust. 11 touches. He missed a little bit of this game with his own injury, came back in. But assuming Christian McCaffrey's back next week, Mike Davis goes back to being unusable in fantasy, though you probably shouldn't drop him. For Tampa, I think a lot of people expected a get-right game for Tom Brady in this offense, and that was the case. Brady, 341 yards, 3 touchdowns. He also ran for a touchdown on the quarterback sneak. Mike Evans, really, really encouraging. Like, a lot of us thought Mike Evans was done the second Godwin came back, and definitely the second the Antonio Brown signing became official. But 11 targets, team high today, 6 for 77 and a touchdown. I want to see how often he ran in the slot, because I was talking about that last week, how they started to use him in the slot more in that Giants game a couple weeks ago. And it makes sense, because like, you want to get, you know, your big-time playmakers the ball more, and Evans was seeing very few targets, and Bruce Arians talked about it, and now we see them start to use him in the slot more. Let's see, Mike Evans was in the slot, so Godwin was still in there about 60% of the time, which isn't too surprising. You know, but Mike Evans, 45% or 46.2% slot rate, that was right around where it was last week, so his slot rate has skyrocketed over the last handful of weeks. That's going to be really huge for him, getting these targets. We know Brady likes to throw in the middle of the field more than the perimeters and the boundaries. This is massive for Mike Evans. I think if we continue to see this, let's look. Let's start from week 8 on. So from week 8, Mike Evans has been in the slot. Where are you, Mike Evans? I can sort it by team. Probably be a lot easier, huh? Tampa Bay, Mike Evans in the slot. 49.6% of the time. That is huge for him. Like, so from weeks 8, 9, and 10, 49.6% slot rate. Let's do from weeks 1 to 7. See how often he was in the slot for a nice contrast here, comparison. So from weeks 1 to 7, Mike Evans is in the slot 38.3% of the time. So his slot rate's up about 12% almost. That's a huge jump. And he's still really involved in the red zone. A handful of end zone targets in this game. So yeah, like, whereas Mike Evans was scaring me, now I'm really encouraged by Mike Evans now. He's not going to lead the team with 11 targets every week, especially with Antonio Brown there and Gronk still getting work and the running game. They still like to run the football, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, man, like, I was somebody that definitely tried to trade Mike Evans a couple weeks ago. Nobody was really interested. But now, like, if you're in the same situation as me and you couldn't trade Mike Evans, and now you're still holding on to him. Like, I don't think you should be all that freaked out. I mean, I think this is a legitimate thing with him moving into this inside more, getting more favorable matchups, and getting more attention from Tom Brady. So yeah, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, these guys are both like really solid receiver twos the rest of the way, and AB is probably a wide receiver three slash flex. Like, they're trying to give him the ball. They gave him a carry or two on a sweep. He's still getting decent targets. Like, they're definitely trying to give him the football, but I still think it's pretty clear that, you know, that Evans and Godwin are still the alphas in this offense over Antonio Brown. By the way, Mike Evans, 3 end zone targets in this Week 10 game, most among all players in Week 10. Ronald Jones had the most Ronald Jones game ever, meanwhile. He fumbled early, and we all thought he was done. But Bruce Arians went right back to him on the next drive, and he broke off at one point a 98-yard touchdown run, finished with 192 yards and a touchdown on 23 carries. Leonard Fournette had 8 carries for 19 yards. Jones continues to be really, really bad in the passing game. He's dropping passes. He's not getting open for Brady when the play breaks down. He's fumbling. But if you give him credit, I mean, Bruce Arians, like I said, went right back to him, and he produced. Now, I don't know how you, like, even after this game, go into Week 11 and say, yep, I still feel really confident in Ronald Jones. But it was definitely at least encouraging to see Bruce Arians, given the fact that he's, you know, that Giants game, right? He fumbled early, and it was all Leonard Fournette the rest of the way. Same situation here. Jones fumbles early, but they go right back to him. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, he had 23 carries in this game. He had 23 carries the three previous games before today or yesterday. So they got the Rams this week. I like the sign that they trusted him. He's probably a mid-range RB2, but just know that I still believe that there's a really, really, really low floor potentially for Ronald Jones. But the ceiling's there, as you saw. He's a big play waiting to happen. And by the way, just got saw on Twitter that Christian McCaffrey is actually unlikely to play in Week 11. So don't jump ship on Mike Davis just yet. All right. Before we move on to the 4 o'clock games, gotta talk about Pristine Auction. Listen, we all get really attached to these players on our fantasy teams, right? Like, for me, I love Davante Adams. I love watching him score touchdowns for my fantasy team. Best way to, like, just show your appreciation, other than, obviously, you know, support some of these charities these players have, too, by the way. I think it's a really good idea. But another way to show your love, go get a Davante Adams signed mini helmet or a Davante Adams signed jersey or signed picture or whatever you want, because Pristine Auction has all of them. They have daily auctions starting at as little as $1 on over 1,000-plus items, over 8,000 football items alone in their auctions at all time. The authenticity is guaranteed on all products. Like I said, signed helmets, footballs, jerseys, pictures, all that and more. So, to get signed up, go to pristineauction.com, use the promo code FTN, and you get $10 off your first invoice. I mean, let them know we sent you. Use promo code FTN, bam, $10 off your first invoice on whatever you look to acquire. We also have a Will Fuller signed mini helmet, speaking of pristineauction.com, that is being given away once we get to 200 ratings and reviews on iTunes. So, you know, penciling that in, all you got to do, leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, screenshot it, and send it to the Fade the Chalk Fade Twitter handle, and bam, you're automatically entered to win. So, Pristine Auction, I mean, you guys can not only enter to get a free Will Fuller mini helmet that's signed, but you can also, if you don't win, go to pristineauction.com, use the promo code FTN, bid on whatever you want, win some awesome items, and enhance your football collection. Again, it's Pristine Auction, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Let's go to these 4 o'clock games. Miami 29, Chargers 21. So, interesting backfield situation for the Dolphins. We had Jordan Howard as a healthy scratch, which was pretty surprising because Matt Breida was ruled out and they're still without Myles Gaskin. They must have really liked what they saw from Savon Ahmed last week, as he was the lead back here, got the start, and had 21 carries, 85 yards and a touchdown. He added a catch for 5 yards. So Myles Gaskin's on IR. He could return after next week, which could, you know, make things really interesting. I saw, I think it was a beat reporter tweet that Myles Gaskin might have a job when he comes back. They've gotten a nice, you know, spark out of Savon Ahmed so far, but Myles Gaskin has legitimately been awesome this year, so I'd be kind of surprised if Gaskin comes back and just isn't playing. But, I mean, Ahmed played 44 snaps, Patrick Laird played 10, and recently acquired DeAndre Washington only played 4. He was clearly the lead back. He should be one of the top waiver candidates for week number 11. They have the Broncos, which isn't a great matchup, but it's a guy that could get 20 carries once again. And then if you need a running back this week, you know, you pick him up, you play him as a flex, and you cross the bridge with Myles Gaskin once we get to it. It's not a lock that he comes back. It's just, you know, the IR, we didn't get placed on IR. You miss at least 3 weeks. So this next week will be the third week. So we'll see. But you kind of have to pick him up if you need a running back right now. I really like this game from a DFS perspective. I like Tua a lot. You know, he didn't crush you, but only 169 passing yards. He did have 2 touchdowns. Didn't run the ball in this game, which was a little bit frustrating. Devontae Parker had an incredible one-handed touchdown catch called back. It was the right call, but he almost made an incredible catch. Still led the way with 7 targets, so 7 of the 24 targets going to Devontae Parker. We know his splits without Preston Williams. I think Parker's still a high-end wide receiver 3 going forward. For the Chargers, Keenan Allen didn't have double-digit targets for the first time since 1974. Still scored a touchdown, though, 3 for 39 in that score. Hunter Henry finally gets in the end zone. I really liked Henry this week, so I was happy that worked out. 4 catches for 30 yards and a score. Like, he had been so involved. He's like top 8 or 9 in tight end targets since Justin Herbert took over, but he was like outside the top 20 in fantasy points. Like, he was going to start scoring touchdowns and getting more fantasy points, and it happened in this game. Maybe tight ends could be something against Miami going forward. They've now given up a touchdown to Hunter Henry, and then they gave up 2 touchdowns to Arizona tight ends last week. So they have Noah Fant next week, something to maybe keep an eye on. Kalen Ballage still operating as a lead back for the Chargers. What a time. He played 46 snaps. Joshua Kelly played 17. Tremaine Pope didn't play a single snap. Ballage had 18 carries to Kelly's 7. Ballage also had 5 catches for 34 yards, whereas Joshua Kelly appeared to be the pass-catching back in place of Justin Jackson over the last couple weeks. That hasn't happened, so, yeah, they clearly haven't been impressed with Joshua Kelly. We saw it as soon as Justin Jackson was starting to take over in that Saints game a few weeks back, and then it was the Tremaine Pope game where he was playing and getting more touches than Kelly. So, Joshua Kelly, Eckler's going to return soon. Jackson could be back. Like, Joshua Kelly is somebody you need to drop if he's still on your team. Moving along to Denver and the Vegas Raiders. This game was brutal. 37-12. Raiders all over in this one. I had a lot of Raiders defense in DFS, which helped me cash. But I didn't expect them to be this good. I mean, Drew Lock is just not good. 1 touchdown on 4 picks. Might have even fumbled, too. I don't even know. It was just a train wreck for the Broncos offense. Is there anything good to take away from Denver? I mean, Jerry Jeudy had 8 targets again. KJ Hamler at 10. Fant was a bust. Tim Patrick, 4 for 61. Like, Jeudy and Patrick are solid wide receiver 3s each week, I feel like. The running game is a mess. Like, why is Phillip Lindsay getting 4 touches? Like, they're not using him as a passing downs back at all. They haven't all year or really last year. Melvin Gordon, like, has done nothing since that Jets game on Thursday night a few weeks ago. Like, I don't know how you feel good about starting anybody from Denver right now, outside of maybe Noah Fant and maybe Jerry Jeudy. For the Raiders, So Josh Jacobs had a great game. 21 carries, 112 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He had 4 catches for 24 yards. 25 touches, we love that. But this is now the second week in a row where Devontae Booker's getting significant work. Jacobs still led the way with 44 snaps. Booker played 25. But Booker had 16 carries in this game. I want to see how many came in the fourth quarter. I know it wasn't like a majority of them. You know, he still got a lot of work in this game. I mean, it looks like a lot of it did come in this last drive. 1, 2, So after the Broncos' onside kick, Booker had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 carries, including that 23-yard touchdown run. So you take away that last drive, it was a more competitive game. You know, maybe he has 8 carries instead. But they're still giving him, like, kind of like Latavius Murray type usage, right? Like 8 to 10 carries a game. And the Raiders, I mean, Derek Carr's been 25 pass attempts or fewer in 3 straight games. So they're another team that's kind of like the Browns, right? They're running the ball like crazy. Darren Waller, once again, led the team in targets, but his yardage has been really bad lately because they're not throwing the ball a lot. He dropped a surefire 50-yard touchdown pass down the sideline that would have made his day fantastic. So that was very tilting. But you're still starting Darren Waller each week without question. But definitely keep an eye on this Devontae Booker situation. If you have Josh Jacobs, you need to pick up Devontae Booker. He is legitimately like the Latavius Murray for this offense, and he'll be a really solid RB2 with the way this offensive line's playing and blocking if anything were to happen to Josh Jacobs. All right, let's get this over with. Arizona 32, Buffalo 30. Give credit to DeAndre Hopkins. Incredible football player. I threw my remote across the room when he caught that Hail Mary. Great players make great plays. What a game, though. Really fun. I thought the Bills did a great job containing Kyler Murray in the first half. I mean, Arizona had 9 points at halftime. Murray really wasn't running all that well. Of course, he had the 2 rushing touchdowns because you can't stop Kyler Murray inside the 10-yard line. And then, of course, his lone passing touchdown came on that 50-yard Hail Mary. So still another really great fantasy day for Kyler Murray, who's on pace for like nearly 20 rushing touchdowns this year. He's, you know, might be him and Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback one in fantasy, especially with the way Lamar Jackson's kind of fallen off a little bit this year. Kenny and Drake was questionable heading into this game. They said they were going to test out how he was feeling prior to the game to see if he could play. He was active, and he kind of returned to being, you know, the 1A in this offense over Chase Edmonds. He played 38 snaps. Edmonds played 36, so the snaps were pretty tight, but Drake had 16 carries. Edmonds had 8. Drake had 100 yards in this game, lost a fumble. It's still, like, Buffalo is a team you can run on. Drake still wasn't, like, overly impressive in this game. Edmonds was once again super efficient, 8 carries for 56 yards. Also had 3 catches for 21 yards, and Drake had 1 catch for 9 yards. So Drake back in the lineup, back to not being involved in the passing game. Kirk was disappointing, 4 for 27. I thought he would really do well against the Bills, who were without Josh Norman and Levi Wallace. And then Dane Jackson came in. He got hurt, and then it was Grant Worley, who they had to, or Daryl Worley, who had to, they had to sign. So definitely disappointing game from Kirk. You still don't hate the 6 targets. But yeah, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, thanks for ruining my afternoon. I got over it pretty quickly, though, because at the end of the day, like, the Bills win that game 9 times out of 10. You know, crazy, crazy Hail Mary. Although I should say the Bills' penalties and terrible play in the third quarter really should never have been in that position. Let's put it that way. To the Bills' side, Josh Allen, really weird game from him. There was plenty of good. There was plenty of bad. He had 2 picks in this game. One was a terrible read where Patrick Peterson in zone coverage just took it away from him. And then the other one was a good read to Gabriel Davis, but he threw it way too late and got picked off by Drake Kirkpatrick. Also still had 2 touchdowns in this game. Had a receiving touchdown because Brian Daboll is a freaking wizard. And he had a 38 rushing yards. You know, all in all, an awesome fantasy game for Josh Allen, who continues to be really good in fantasy. The Bills just continue to abandon the run, which, with the way their passing game looks most weeks, I don't think it's a bad decision with what Brian Daboll's doing. You would like to see him have some semblance of a running game to keep defenses honest. We'll see what happens in Week 11. The Bills are on, or Week 12. The Bills are on bye in Week 11, and then they get the Chargers at home when they return. Cole Beasley, 11 catches, 109 yards, and a touchdown on a team-high 13 targets. He was awesome this game. He had a nasty route on Patrick Peterson on his touchdown. And now John Brown, 8 targets in this game, but he left with a kind of nasty-looking ankle injury. I'm a little worried about that. They do have the bye. Hopefully he doesn't miss too much time, but it did not look good. I mean, Diggs and Beasley combined for 24 of the 47 targets in this game. Diggs had another 90-yard game and another touchdown. He still leads the NFL in targets. He's one of the top 3 receivers in fantasy points. He beat Patrick Peterson on what should have been the game-winning touchdown. The dude's incredible. Just every week, Stephon Diggs just gets it done. But Beasley, probably going to be somebody you need to look at off waivers. I think John Brown's presence just helps this offense so much because he stretches the field, and that helps a guy like Cole Beasley, especially in zone coverage. But Beasley's still going to get, especially if this team throws the ball 40 times a week, he's still going to get 7 to 10 targets every single week, you know, if John Brown's out. And Gabriel Davis in deeper leagues, his playing time, he becomes an every down player because the Bills run a ton of three wide. They also run a ton of four wide, too. So in deeper leagues, I know he didn't have a catch this game, but Gabriel Davis, somebody to look at. And I know they're on a bye, but unless they're 16-point favorites or they're in a game where you know they can have success running the football, I don't know how you feel confident starting Singletary or Zach Moss. Like, we saw the Patriots game a couple weeks back. Brian Daboll and the Bills plan all practice long and all week long was, we're going to run the ball in this game. That's the strength of our offense in this matchup against the Patriots. I don't know if that's going to be their game plan most weeks. So Moss is the preferred option. He's playing more than Singletary once again. I think it's now 3 weeks in a row he's out-snapped Devin Singletary. Singletary had a bad game, honestly. He had a brutal drop. He had a bad 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty. So 3 weeks in a row where Zach Moss has now out-snapped Devin Singletary. I don't really want to say it, but Singletary might be droppable in more shallow leagues, if we're being honest. Pittsburgh 36, Bengals 10. Weather was a little bit worrisome here, but don't tell Ben Roethlisberger that. Four touchdowns, 333 yards. Everybody got some. Deontay, 6 for 116 and a touchdown on 11 targets. All three Steelers receivers had double-digit targets in this game. Juju, though, 13 targets. First time all year he led the Steelers in a game in targets. He's now had at least 65 yards or a touchdown in each of the last three games. He had 77 yards and a score in this game. Claypool had two touchdowns on 10 targets. It was weird to see the Steelers throw the ball 46 times in a game. They were ahead comfortably throughout. But they had not run the ball well for the last couple weeks. And I think Mike Tomlin was just saying, all right, similar to the Bills, let's just play to our strengths in this matchup. And these receivers got separation all day long. So awesome game from Roethlisberger. The Steelers stack, nobody's really talking about it, but they won people some money. Deontay Johnson, still, if I had to rank the Steelers receivers going forward each week, I'd rank Deontay 1. Juju and Claypool are, like, so close. Claypool's a deep threat. They give him carries. You know, he had two carries in this game. I'd probably say Claypool, too, but it's, like, right neck and neck with Juju Smith-Schuster. They're all startable each week. But Deontay Johnson, you know, when he's been healthy, in the two games he hasn't left early or got hurt, double-digit targets in every single game. The Bengals, T. Higgins, 7 for 115 and a touchdown on a team-high 9 targets. We kind of talked about Higgins in the podcast. Like, these perimeter deep-threat receivers can beat Pittsburgh. That's really the lone weakness of their defense. And Higgins got him for a 54-yard long catch, then he had a touchdown later on. A.J. Green had his second goose egg in the last 5 weeks. Auden Tate continues to play more and see more involvement. And, look, the Bengals are 2-6-1. They're not going anywhere. It makes all the sense in the world for them to kind of just scale back A.J. Green's playing time and give Auden Tate more runs. So A.J. Green, if he didn't drop him already, he's obviously very droppable. Tyler Boyd, 8 targets, 6 for 41. He's going to give you a solid floor each week. And then Gio, not a great matchup, but didn't like seeing Travion Williams and Samaje Perine combined for 12 carries. And Gio had only at 8. He was still the pass-catching back, but we'll see if Joe Mixon can return in week number 11. Saints 27, 49ers 13. Drew Brees took a really, really hard hit on a sack, left the game, came back in to close the drive in the first half, and we saw in the start of the second half, it was Jameis Winston under center. Brees apparently dealing with rib injuries, might be multiple ribs. He's probably not going to play this week. It sounds like Drew Brees is going to miss some time. So, like, Winston came in, he had 4 targets to Alvin Kamara. Like, Brees is the best intermediate short passer in NFL history. He's so good at targeting the running back. So, like, if you're worried about Alvin Kamara's target share going down because Brees isn't there, let's also remember this isn't just like, it's not like an Alex Smith situation where it's just he's checking it down. It's Alvin Kamara is the heart and soul of our offense, and this is a Sean Payton thing as much as it's a Drew Brees thing, that he's getting 6 to 9 targets a game, regardless of who's the quarterback. Like, I know Jameis is a guy that throws it deep, but that's not the Saints playbook. Like, Bridgewater didn't throw deep last year. Now, Bridgewater doesn't throw deep really ever, but I still believe that was more of a Saints thing. Like, so don't worry about Alvin Kamara, who, oh, by the way, scored 3 touchdowns in this game and just is awesome. I mean, the fact that your running back one can have 15 rushing yards and 8 carries and still have 30 fantasy points because he has 7 for 83 on 8 targets and 3 total touchdowns just speaks volumes to how good Alvin Kamara is. I will say, though, I bet we see Taysom Hill get, like, 6 to 7 carries a game if he's taking more snaps at quarterback with Breeze out. That could hurt Alvin Kamara, potentially. But he's still, you know, a smash play every week. He's got the Falcons this week. Michael Thomas of the dud, 2 catches on 7 targets for 27 yards. Maybe Winston helps Thomas, but he didn't really help him when he came in. He probably should have scored a touchdown, but Winston just sailed the ball over his head when he could have probably walked into the end zone. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Saints offense looks with Winston under center. But from the snaps Jameis did play, the offensive, you know, system looked exactly the same. We'll just see how efficient it is. They got the Falcons this week, so Jameis going to be really interesting to see how many people go to him in season-long and DFS, assuming Drew Brees does get ruled out. The 49ers, I mean, the reports were right about McKinnon getting a lot of work. He had 18 carries in this game. Jermichael Hasty only had 3, and I think Hasty actually broke his collarbone. But it looks like this is the end for these backs. Raheem Mostert and or Tevin Coleman could be back next week. Brandon Ayuk, 14 targets. One of the highest number of targets on the week. 7 for 75 and a touchdown. He's a wide receiver 2, at least until Deebo Samuel returns. And maybe still a decent wide receiver 2 or wide receiver 3. They're using him in a lot of ways. He's running a ton of routes. I think he was among the league leaders in routes run for the week as well. So, Ayuk looking really promising. Jordan Reed, 5 for 62 on 6 targets, including an awesome catch. The snaps went up for him after barely playing on Thursday night. I wouldn't mind picking up Jordan Reed if you need a tight end. He looked really good in this game, and we know George Kittle's not going to be back for a while, so that'll do it for that game. Last two games of the slate. Seattle loses this one in Los Angeles, 23-16. Really tilting game here. You had to have liked the Rams pass catchers in this game facing the worst secondary in the NFL. A secondary that's on pace to give up the most yards in NFL history. And, like, the Rams did their part moving the ball. Like, Goff was now the 7th quarterback out of 9 to throw for 300 yards against the Seattle Seahawks. The problem is all the rushing touchdowns went to the running backs. Or all the touchdowns went to the running backs. Malcolm Brown scored twice. Henderson scored once. And that was it. The backfield's interesting, though. I wrote about Daryl Henderson in my stock report article, and he was in the stock down portion of it. Yes, Daryl Henderson found the end zone this game, but they immediately started to get Cam Akers more involved in this game. He got carries in the opening drive. He played 18 snaps, I believe it was. 18 snaps. Henderson played 20. Malcolm Brown played 32. And Malcolm Brown is a guy that, you know, he scored a 7-yard and a 1-yard touchdown this game. They've given him plenty of short yardage work in the past when he's healthy. Cam Akers got a couple short yardage carries in this game. And Malcolm Brown's been and will continue to be the preferred third down back and the pass blocking back. So Henderson had 1 catch in this game. Brown had 2. Akers had a team high 10 carries. Now that Akers is finally involved, this might just be a hot hand approach each week. So Henderson had been pushing like really, really strong mid-range running back 2 status. Now he's like a flex play at best, especially now that the Rams lost Andrew Whitworth, their star tackle, to a torn MCL. That's going to hurt this overall offensive line that's been run blocking so much better this year than they were last year. So I'm definitely worried about Daryl Henderson. Cam Akers is a guy to pick up off waivers if he's been dropped, which he probably has been. For the receivers, I loved Josh Reynolds in this game. I had him as a lock play. Did not expect him to be the wide receiver 1 on the Rams. He had 8 for 94 on a team-high 10 targets. And don't look now, but Josh Reynolds, over the last 4 weeks, has 32 targets, so it's 8 targets a game. He's running around the same number of routes as Robert Woods over the last 3 weeks, and he has more targets than Robert Woods over the last 3 weeks. Cooper Kupp, we got the report that he was a little bit banged up entering this game. He only played 37 snaps. Woods played 56. Reynolds played 57. Maybe something to keep an eye on. They probably went a lot more 12 personnel in this game. When they go 12, Cooper Kupp comes off the field. So definitely something to keep an eye on. But yeah, don't look, the Rams run three wide around 75% of the time. It's one of the highest rates in the NFL. So Josh Reynolds is going to play. So another guy you can definitely pick up off waivers. Really encouraging game from him. For Seattle, it was bad. Russell Wilson was terrible in this game. Threw two really bad picks. Did not score a touchdown in this game. Alex Collins scores the lone touchdown for Seattle. He led the way for this backfield with 11 carries. He played 32 snaps. DJ Dallas played 22. Dallas was really used as the pass catching back, and that's it. So they play Thursday night in a short week. Could Carson and or Hyde return? Possibly. If they don't, Collins appears to be suddenly the guy that you'd want from this backfield. DJ Dallas is droppable. And then Metcalf, he had no targets in the first half. Didn't have his first target until like the 9 or 8 minute mark of the third quarter. Look, the Rams secondary is really good. It's not just Jalen Ramsey. Their secondary is really strong. Obviously, Ramsey plays a huge part of that. But yeah, just a bad game from the entire Seattle offense. They weren't on the field very often. And just a game that they hope to forget very, very quickly. Let's close it out with the Patriots 23, Ravens 17. Nice upset win for New England. Jacoby Myers just doing it all. 5 for 59 on a team-high 7 targets. Cam only threw the ball 17 times in this game, but Myers had 7 of those targets. He continued to see a 25% or more target share each week. And he also threw a touchdown to Rex Burkhead. Damien Harris, 22 carries. His chest was not bothering him. I think they gave him the ball in the first 5 plays of the game. Again, 22 carries, 121 yards against a good Ravens defense. Burkhead had 6 carries. James White is droppable, by the way. I've been saying this for 3 weeks now. I don't know why people aren't dropping James White. He's literally not coming on the field unless it's a third down. And it's got to be like 3rd and 5. Like, if it's 3rd and 2, he still doesn't come on the field very often. So he's not involved in the passing game. He's not involved in the offense, despite the team being without Julian Edelman and without N'Keal Harry. So it's time to cut ties with James White. Tony Michel's not getting this job back even when he does return. So this offense is really boring for New England, but I mean, Cam continues to get it done. You know, 2 touchdowns in this game, 1 rushing. He had 11, he has 9 rushing touchdowns this year, so you love to see that. For the Ravens, passing game was a little bit better, but the problem is didn't help Marquise Brown, who had 2 for 14 on 6 targets. Willie Snead had 7 targets. Mark Andrews had 9. Snead scored twice. Lamar Jackson's deep passing has not been good this year, and that's pretty much what they're asking Marquise Brown to do. I'm sure he's growing really frustrated. And then the backfield's back to being ugly. Lamar Jackson led the way with 11 carries. Edwards had 7. Dobbins had 5. Ingram had 5. You're not starting anybody from this team except for Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews right now. You just can't. You really can't. But that will do it for me on this. It's kind of an ugly Week 10. The more I look into the games, I mean, there was a lot of dud performances. A lot of, like I said, just weird touchdowns. Like, the Seattle offense was bad. The Eagles offense was bad. The Ravens were once again bad. Like, there were a lot of really struggling offense in this game. The Rams offense wasn't bad. It's just the guys we wanted to score fantasy points weren't the ones scoring fantasy points. So hopefully Week 10 was still good to you. I can't complain about my week. It's just, you know, that Hail Mary was the only really bad thing that happened to me in Week 10. So like I said, I can't complain. Thank you all for listening. As always, D-Bro and I will be back early Monday evening for the Waiver Wire podcast. Let's get into that playoff push in season long leagues. You got to pick up these guys that are going to help you make that playoff push in your league. So look out for that, early Monday evening, I would say. And again, subscribe, rate, and review. Get entered to win that Will Fuller signed mini helmet. Have a great Monday. Thanks for listening as always. We'll see you guys later.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.